What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and welcome to the show. Hope you guys are all doing good out there. I know it's been a rough couple weeks as far as our football team goes, but you know, hopefully you're enjoying some of this fall weather. I know it's like 40 degrees out right now where I'm at outside of Charlotte. It's pretty cold, so it's been kind of, I enjoy it though. It's been nice. Get a break from that summer heat a little bit. You know, got a bye week this week, no opponent to really talk about, so we're going to cover a few different things that I'm kind of itching to talk about here. And, you know, hopefully you guys are all, you know, got some things you can get taken care of this week. I know for me, this bye week couldn't have came at a better time. I got some new improvements I'm doing to my office where I kind of run everything here. I got a desk that's probably a new desk that's probably about 10 times the size of the old one that I had. And it's just a much better setup. I love it. I'm redecorating my office a little bit here. I'm planning on painting the walls garnet and gold soon because, I want to start doing some more YouTube stuff, some more live stuff. I was able to dig out some of my old national championship stuff that I got while I was out in California after the game in 2014. I got that some of those things hung up and put on the wall. So just excited about that. I got some new things coming for the podcast, like a new microphone arm and shock mount and things like that, just to kind of help things, you know, always improve the quality. And that's my ultimate goal, you know. But at the same time, in the middle of doing all that, I do apologize because I wasn't able to do any kind of instant reaction or I wasn't able to put anything out yesterday. And I didn't get to doing my full game kind of breakdown preview that I like to do on Twitter and Facebook on Friday before the game. Unfortunately, I had a crazy weekend. I had a little bit of a crazy Friday. So I was driving to work and, you know, I live in South Carolina. We're pretty notorious for bad roads. And honestly, we don't pay a ton of taxes, but an overpass kind of part of an overpass broke off and fell on the interstate in front of my car on Friday on my way to work. And, you know, it was unavoidable. I hit it and I hit a piece of concrete that was probably about the size of a grapefruit or a football or something along those lines. And it punctured my oil pan and my car had to get towed. It's still sitting at the shop waiting to see what's going to happen. And I missed work. And it was a crazy kind of weekend that was jam packed with events that just wasn't that great. So I could use a bye week my dang self right now, but I'm fine, even if my car is not, but it'll be okay. So we're just going to jump into it here. I just want to talk about some things now that we don't have an opponent on the bye week. I want to talk about the progress Florida State has made, some of the, like a mid-season eval, just some of my thoughts on the team, the program, the last few games, and where everything's going. Because I know before when they lost to Wake Forest, there was some negativity that came out, and it was a small vocal minority. I understand a lot of people, they said that too, because I came out and kind of did that along Sunday Thoughts thread where I was like, well, you know, just don't bail on this team yet. And, you know, you've had two losses since, and it is still probably a vocal minority because I feel like a lot of people still understand the situation that Florida State is in. But when, you know, you put three losses together in a row and when you run a Florida State page and you're trying to post some positive stuff and it's been a lot of negativity. And so that's just kind of something that I got some interesting numbers for you here today on the show, and I think you're going to enjoy it. And I really do think that when you step back and look at everything as a whole and take the emotions out of it, of losing, because it does suck. It does, you know, it does piss me off that we are still making these critical mistakes in year three and in game seven. It's just, it is frustrating. But I think at the same time, there's a lot of context around these that really isn't being taken into account. And so we'll start with just a couple of my thoughts on that Clemson game that happened Saturday, because I didn't get to do any kind of wrap up or anything like that. So we'll start with that. And so when I look at the Clemson game, you look at it was disappointing. I understand that. And you were down 20 at one point, but you were able to fight back. I understand people are going to say that Clemson played soft in the second half, but I mean, their starters were still in. They were still running blitzes. They were still throwing the ball. You know, yeah, okay, they did go a little soft, but they were still trying to win that game. It's not like they were just trying to hand Florida State a comeback victory. So, you know, I understand that, but I still think this team fights. And honestly, you can say what you want about them playing soft, but I mean, Florida State was one onside kick away from potentially winning the game. So I understand it probably wasn't 6 points close, but you can't look at it like that because things like that happen all the time. I mean, look at the Tennessee-Alabama game. They were up by 18 points at one point in the game. And then they almost lost on a game-winning field goal if Alabama had, maybe made it. I don't know how that changes things. But, again, that's the thing is you can say someone went soft, but that's part of the game. You know, it's how you manage it. If you don't stay aggressive and you let another team come back, it's still a loss. So, but as far as the game goes, I do think there was a lot of positive, and I think there was a few negatives in there too. You just have to understand the competition that you're playing in. Clemson is a good team. I know a lot of us were down on them this year. They're not the teams of the past where they were, 15-0 or 14-1 and stuff like that. I don't think so. I do think they're probably going to go undefeated this year just because they don't play a very hard schedule, and they've already won, to me, the hardest games on the schedule. They still have Syracuse coming up, but they get them at home, where Clemson rarely ever loses. So just to go on some of the positives, and really quick, Florida State realistically lost this game in 2 minutes out of 60 minutes. So I think they played pretty well for about 57 minutes. And, somewhere in the 2 to 3 minute range, they let things get out of hand, and it was too much for them to recover from, which is something that, I made a point of on social media this week after the game, this team seems to play really good stretches of football, and then they also play stretches of football where they just can't seem to get out of their own way. They just seem to shoot themselves in the foot all the time. And where Florida State is at a program right now, it's hard for them to overcome those holes that they dig themselves into. Like Wake Forest, you made a game out of it, but you were down 28-7 at one point. If you don't give up 17 points to Clemson in 2 minutes, do you win that game? Potentially so. Maybe that's something that doesn't happen against worse teams. If that was Boston College, you can probably overcome that, but not against a top five team in the country. So, the mistakes are frustrating, and I understand it. And, it is technically year three. It is game seven. You just kind of want to be like, all right, well, when are we going to stop seeing this? But, again, you still have to just look at the quality of competition. You also have to look at, another thing on this is, I don't know 100% that, I know 2020 counted. I know the COVID year counted. I understand that. I don't really put a whole lot of weight into that, because when I look at, at work, we tried to go during the pandemic. Our training went to Zoom meetings. And I don't know, how many of you guys have done Zoom meetings or not, but I don't pay attention to those. It's so hard to be engaged. It's just like you just can't really pay attention. You're not learning anything. They couldn't work out together. They couldn't practice. I just feel like 2020 was just a wasted year. They should have almost just canceled everything and came back and tried again the next year, just with how disjointed it was and just how far behind they got put with the limitations that they had. How can you, I understand a lot of established teams had bad years. So how are you supposed to establish a new offense, a new defense, a new culture, new thing, new strength and conditioning, when you can't even see your team in person? It's insane. So to me, I understand it happened. Like I said, I do get that. But to me, you're looking at almost year two, one and a half at this point, of the Mike Norvell era. And so for me, you can see the progress coming, but you also have to understand, like, you just played three top 25 teams, and a couple of them are really good. You didn't get NC State without Devin Leary. You didn't get Clemson without two or three of their defensive line or two or three of the members of their secondary like a lot of the other teams did. You got them the one game that they've been healthy in like the last 2 years was this game against Florida State. That's just something that you have to take into account. And again, we're going to talk about the progress in a second, because that's something I got some interesting numbers for you that I think you guys are going to like. So just looking at some of the good and bad from this game, without spending too much time on it. You put up the most yards of the season on Clemson, including what Wake Forest was able to do with two added overtime periods, which is positive. You put up almost 500 yards on this offense. I understand there was some stuff there where they were playing softer defense in the second half, but, you were torching them, or at least on the ground. You were putting up yards in the first half, so I don't think that's completely it. You put up 223 yards rushing without the negative plays, which is the highest allowed this season by Clemson. And then you also have to account that they don't give up 200 yards rushing very often. Their season average was giving up 67 yards. So that was extremely positive and extremely impressive. And that's without your best running back, Treshawn Ward. And when I look at that, you know, I said in my preview, do I think Florida State's going to rush for 200 yards? No, I don't. But do I think they can easily rush for over 100? And that would help them in this game? Yeah, that's what I said, because when you really looked at who Clemson had played as far as rushing offenses, Florida State was by far the best. They had not faced one top 60 offense or rushing offense this season, and Florida State was somewhere in the top 25. So it was entirely possible, but they even blew away my expectations. I think they did a great job of running the ball. And, you know, kudos to the offensive line. I think they did pretty good in this game. Their pressures were, I think they only allowed like 17 pressures, 2 sacks, and they averaged 6.06 yards per carry, which was a stat on Twitter that I saw. Shout out to Kurt Weiler for putting this out. Highest yards per carry Clemson has allowed since the 2016 title game versus Alabama. And, you know, we still have to understand that at this point in the rebuild, this offensive line has been awful for a long time, and you have got it to average through the transfer portal, through a couple of other things, through Alex Atkins working, you know, to coach these guys up and get them in better, form. But they're still an average offensive line, and I think they really did hold their own against realistically an NFL defensive line. I mean, when you look at that Clemson front, point out one guy who is not going to go to the NFL, because it's not going to happen. I mean, they're all that good. And so, you know, to hold, now, of course, they weren't perfect. And when you look at like what Miles Murphy was able to do in the first half, he had 4 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, and a forced fumble. You know, yeah, okay, you got whooped a little bit in some crucial plays, but I mean, those guys are really good. That is what is keeping Clemson as good as they are, is that defensive front. And so that's the other thing, is I think you just do have to give Clemson the credit. I saw some stats on the broadcast when I went and did the rewatch. Clemson has won 65 straight games when leading at the half, which is the longest streak in FBS. They are 33-7 in one possession games, which is the best in the FBS. And so now a lot of people are sitting here pissed off that Florida State loses a game to a team who's pushing for a national championship, who has the longest streak of winning one possession or leading halftime games, the best in FBS at one possession games. And you're asking a team that's in a rebuild, you know, to go out and upset them, and then you're mad when they don't. I thought they did well in that game, considering who they were playing. The only game in the stretch that I'm really mad about was the NC State game, because you had it, you should have won it, and you gave it away. But, I mean, when you look at how they played against Clemson, and this is something that I'm going to make a point on here in just a second, but they're getting better versus the competition. If you can't look at this team, and yes, it's still frustrating, I get it, like, those mistakes are still frustrating to watch, because you know this team is better than the way they play sometimes, but if you can't see the improvement by this team when you watch them play from where we have been at since, you know, 2017-18 and the years going forward, I don't know what to tell you, because it's clear and obvious. And I understand that, you know, I get it. Everybody's like, oh, look at Tennessee and look at TCU and even Illinois and stuff like that. I understand that. And they're turning it around a little bit faster. But, you know, everybody's situation wasn't the same. And that doesn't mean everybody's situation was great. It's not like Heupel took over a 10-win team. Or, you know, it wasn't like the TCU team was rolling when they took it over. But at the same time, like, every situation is different. And Florida State's had a hard schedule this year. You know, and there's just some things that are out of your control. Of course everybody wants to be undefeated and number 3 in the country in year 2 under a new coach. Of course they do. That doesn't mean it happens, because for every Josh Heupel, there's a Scott Frost. There's a Justin Fuente. You know, you go down the list, there's a ton of them. You know, I bet Michigan State wishes they had kept Nick Saban a little bit longer, you know, or tried to anyway before he went to the Dolphins. So, you know, there's just some things there that you have to understand where these two programs were at. And like I said, you had the positive with the rushing. I thought the defense, you know, you can't give up 6 straight drives, scoring drives, but I thought overall they did pretty well to hold Clemson to field goals on a few of them. And they were put in a tough situation a lot. They were put in short field situations too often. against against a team like that really, when you're starting in automatic field position, because they have a great senior kicker, a veteran kicker. And so that's one of the things. You know, you had less penalties in this game, finally, 3 penalties for 17 yards. You know, and like I said, when you look at this game, they lost it in about 2 minutes. You know, you don't miss, let's just say, and this is the thing that's frustrating to me more than anything. And I get it. You know, I want to be positive. I don't want to be negative, but there are some things that frustrate me. Like, why does it always seem like Florida State is the one that misses the tackle, that misses, you know, Trey Benson falls down in the open field. You miss the sack that gives up a touchdown when you had a free blitzer, essentially. Like, it's all those little things that are so frustrating to see Florida State feel, or at least it feels like they're always the one to miss that play. But at the same time, that just goes to show you that that's how close they are. You know, if you don't miss that sack and you don't give up that long touchdown because you at least affected the throw, if you don't fumble the ball right before halftime and turn it into a 17-point swing, this is a different game. And that's just how close they are. And so, I mean, they really have to get better at finishing drives. I think that's the one thing that's killing Florida State this year. They were very effective in the red zone last year, and this year there's just too many empty possessions. They move the ball down the field, and then they don't convert on fourth, or they can't kick a field goal because they don't have a good kicker, and they have too many empty possessions. But if they can get that under control, then this team has moved the ball on just about, you know, some of the better defenses in this conference. So, but even making a few mistakes, I mean, Florida State was up 14-7 for a quarter and a half over the number 4 team in the country. I mean, that's still impressive to do. And, you know, whether you feel like they played soft or not in the second half, they still were able to come back and make it a 6-point game. So, like I said, you're an onside kick and maybe some fortunate plays going down the field away from winning the game. And, you know, I don't care how you play in the second half, it still would have counted as a win. So, you know, take that for what it is. But, you know, again, you put up 460 yards. You had more yards per play than Clemson, 6.05 to 5.15. You had a higher success rate, a higher third down success rate. You were only 1% off on your havoc rate created by your defense. And so, you know, I mean, Florida State did not play that terrible in that game, considering you're going against a better team who's playing better football right now. And that's just the truth of it. But you were right there in that game. And so, and even Dabo, you know, after the game, as much as we don't care for Dabo, even he credited Mike Norvell. You know, he sees it. He sees that this team is not the team that they've come, you know, been able to play against and just absolutely smack around for the last few years. He knows this team is getting better. He knows Florida State is back headed in the right direction. And, you know, if he's willing to give them credit, then who are we as fans to sit here and call for people's jobs and stuff like that, you know? So, it's just something that I think people need to be patient. Not too patient, because I do understand that there are expectations at Florida State. You know, going 7-5 and 8-4 isn't going to cut it. But when you look at the gutter that we came out of since about 2017 to where this team looks like they're headed anyway, you know, if you can get back to winning 8-9 games, 10 games a year, at least in the interim, you know, nobody knows, but do I think Norvell is going to win 5 national championships at Florida State and, you know, be the next Nick Saban? No, I don't know that. Nobody knows that. But do I think he's a good coach who has this team headed in the right direction? Of course I do. And, you know, you also look at the way he's gone about it. You know, I can't even tell you the last time Florida State's had a player arrested, knock on wood. You know, there's been not a whole lot of grade issues. They started the Seminole Scholar thing. You know, it's just, there's so much that's right for FSU. You just need to see a little bit more in the win-loss column. You know, but again, you're 4-3. This is pretty much exactly where, this is where I expected them to be. This is about where everybody expected them to be after the season. And to me, if everybody preseason thought they were going to be 7-5, 8-4, and, you know, we all said, oh, well, that's good. That gets you a bowl game. That gets you back on track. That gets you some momentum in recruiting. Well, now when they lose 3 games, I mean, where else were they supposed to lose? If they're going to go 8-4, they can't go 12-0. So why be pissed after 3 losses? It happens. They had to lose at some point, and it was against all 3 teams that were really good. And, you know, look at the Atlantic. I mean, the Atlantic is stacked. It's tough. It's tough to win. Of course, NC State took a hit losing Devin Leary, but you even got Syracuse. You know, look at Syracuse. They're undefeated in the Atlantic. You put Florida State in the Coastal, and they're playing for an ACC title this year, and I have no doubt about that. So, you know, you have to look at the relative competition that you have out there, which is something that now I want to transition to. So I just want to talk about the progress of FSU so far under Norvell and why I feel like we just need to be a little patient and give him a little bit more time. And again, you have to hold him to the standard. I understand that too, but I feel like this team is just moving in the right direction, and this is the point that I want to make. So obviously Florida State was the measuring stick of the ACC for a very long time. But now, since about 2015, it has been Clemson. So if we use Clemson as the measuring stick, let's just look at some things here, how Florida State plays. So first off, just some of my notes that I took on this. So progress for FSU. You started 4-0 since the first time since 2015, and you lost three games to ranked teams by a combined 18 points. One of those teams was coming off an 11-win season and an Atlantic Division title. You lost a road game that you should have won versus a top 15 team that has won now 14 games in a row at home. And your last loss was a six-point loss to a top five team who's on a 13-game win streak. I mean, guys, we lost to Jacksonville freaking State last year. I know it was kind of a fluke play, and you shouldn't have lost that game. You started 0-4. I mean, 4-3 with three close losses against three really good teams is not something to start hanging your head, you know, for. I know it's unfortunate. I know it pisses you off because Florida State does have a standard, and we're not used to this, and there is no such thing as moral victories, and Mike Norvell said that too. That's not the case that I'm trying to make. I'm just trying to make the case of look at who you're losing to and where you're at in your rebuild and how close you are. You know, Florida State is in mid-rebuild form right now. They're winning the games they should. They're losing some close games against good competition. Wake Forest, NC State, and Clemson are at the best periods they have ever had in program history. And Florida State is, you know, they're right there with them in a rebuild. So if you can't see that that's progress, you know, if Florida State was rolling, if Florida State had all the talent and a very veteran team and had 10-plus years in the same system, I mean, tell me they couldn't win any of these games. So that's just something that I'm looking at right now. I just understand that I think a lot of times people are just, they got to have immediate satisfaction nowadays. If you don't win a national championship within 2 years, people are ready to fire a coach. And I don't think that's a wise decision to make because you're going to fall behind in recruiting and you're going to lose that continuity. And, you know, right now, if you ask me, do I think they should fire Mike Norvell? Hell no. You got Alex Atkins there. First off, that's reason enough not to fire him because you have Hakeem Williams in the pipeline. You have Blake Nicholson in the pipeline. You have Lucas Simmons coming. You already have Armella here. You know, you have some of the pieces. Now you have to keep winning. You have to keep them in the boat, and you have to add more. But you have some pieces coming in that are at your weak spots that you need that would maybe put this team over the top. Now, of course, there's some things, I think, you know, in the secondary and stuff like that that can be reevaluated. But, you know, that's the thing is Florida State is close in a rebuild to a lot of these teams that are at the best point in their program history. And, you know, if you had Fabian Lovett, if you had Bless Harris at tackle, you know, and that's not even adding anybody new. If you just had those two guys and you had a kicker who was at 90%, you know, field goal rate or whatever, this team is probably 5-2, maybe even 6-1 with an upset win over Clemson. You know, I mean, you just never know. And so that's a point that I wanted to make. But when you look at the past five seasons for FSU and Clemson, here, this is, like I talked about, if Clemson is the measuring stick, then let's measure ourselves against Clemson and where we're at and why I think we're closing the gap. So in the past five seasons, Florida State, this is going from 2018 to 2022, and this is considering, you know, basically from the end of Jimbo, and I tried to do this as like, you know, who is still on the roster. There are some kids from 2017 still on Florida State's roster. I didn't really find many, if any, on Clemson's, so I just went with 2018. So from 2018 to 2022, Florida State has signed 0 5-star players. Clemson has signed 16 5-stars, 9 of which played against FSU on Saturday night. 9 5-stars to 0. Average class ranking is 19th for Florida State. Average class ranking for Clemson is 7th. Average class rating, 89.01 for FSU, 92.1 for Clemson. The record over the past 4 years has been 23-30 for FSU. 23-30 for Clemson, 55-6. That's ridiculous. Like, if you just read these stats alone, if you covered your eyes, and I have a couple more for you here real quick. Florida State has had 14 NFL draft picks since 2018, and 6 of those came in 2018, a lot of the leftover Jimbo players. 3 in the first round. Clemson's had 23 in that same time, 7 in the first round. If you covered your eyes and you didn't know who I was talking about right there, and I said, okay, one team's got 16 more 5-stars. Their class ranking is top 10 versus cracking the top 20. Their class rating is higher. Their record is 55-6 to 23-30. They've had, you know, almost twice as many NFL draft picks. You would probably be like, okay, well, guess what? One of those teams is probably about to whip the other ones, you know what. And so when you look at that, and Florida State is playing in closer games against these teams, I mean, come on, guys, you know, look at as far as even NFL draft picks. When you look at NC State, they've had 16 in that same amount of time. So they've had more than Florida State. Wake Forest has even had 8 in that time. So these teams are pretty good. And when you look at how, so again, using Clemson as a measuring stick of the ACC and where you're trying to get, when you look at how they've played Clemson since 2018, and this is, there's some extra details in here that I wanted to make sure to include, because you're not always playing the same Clemson team. So in 2018, when you faced Clemson, they were 8-0. They were number 2 in the country. They ended up going 15-0 and won the national championship in that season. You lost by 49 points, 59-10. You put up 277 less yards than they did in that game. In 2019, they were 6-0, number 2 in the country. They went 14-1 and lost in the title game that season. You lost 45-14, which is minus 31 points. You were outgained by 299 yards. So now, they didn't play in 2020, of course. So then 2021, we know it was a little tighter game. But that Clemson team was 5-3. They were not ranked, and they ended up finishing 10-3 that season. They had a bad offense. But even still, the game was 30-20. That was only a 10-point gap, and you got outgained by 136 yards. So now fast forward to 2022. They are 6-0, number 4 in the country, and you lost by 6 points, and you outgained them by 90 yards. So you went from being outgained by almost 300 yards to, in a matter of a few years, and you know, once Norvell has taken over, now you've only lost by 6 points. You went from losing by 49 points to 6 points. You went from getting outgained 200 and almost 300 yards to outgaining them by almost 100 yards. That, I mean, if you can't see the progress, I don't know what to tell you, because that does speak for itself. And when you look at the Atlantic Division, again, like we talked about before, you have a lot of mature programs that are in full stride. And so I was like, okay, let's go back and look at the continuity and the experience of each team. When you look at staff tenures, Dabo was hired in 2008 midseason. So this is now his 15th season at Clemson. He had already been on the staff since 2003. The previous two seasons before he took over was 8-5, 9-4, and that team was ranked 21st in the country the season before he took over. His first 3 years, 9-5, 6-7, and then 10-4. You know, and there was a lot of people that thought Dabo was going to get fired when they went 6-7. So the thing is, you have really, and you know, I know COVID counts, but we'll count, I'm just going to say 2.5 years realistically. And we're not even finished with this year yet. Who knows? If Florida State wins out, people are probably going to be talking a lot different about this team than the way they are now. But, you know, you're talking about, you took over still a ranked top 25 team, and you've been there for 15 years, and you were already on staff for 5 years before that. When you look at NC State, Dave Dorn was hired in 2013. This is now his 10th season. The previous two seasons before he took over, they were 8-5 and 7-6, so still a winning program. Since Dorn was hired, he went 3-9. They stuck it out. They didn't fire him. 8-5, 7-6, 7-6, and then 9 win seasons, you know, He put up 2 9-1 seasons after that. So he's had 10 years at the same school to build his program. Then Dave Clawson. And we're only going to do the three that, you know, the three top teams in the Atlantic. That's who we're comparing to. You know, Wake Forest. Dave Clawson was hired in 2014. So this is his 9th season. Now, he took over, you know, not great Wake team, but Wake's never historically been that great. They were 5-7 and 4-8 right before he took over. His first three seasons, they went 3-9, 3-9, 7-6, and then after that, he got to an 8-win season, and they won 11 games last year. They didn't fire Dave Clawson because he went 3-9 because he hadn't had a chance to build his program yet. You know, I understand the expectations are different at Florida State than Wake Forest. I get that. But again, you just have to look at, like, these guys, you have 9 years in the same program, 10 years at the same program, 15 years at the same program, and two out of three took over a better situation than Norvell inherited. And we're sitting here criticizing Norvell for losing in year 2.5 or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I mean, I get it. The expectation is there, and he's going to have to start cleaning. They're going to have to not make these mistakes at some point. But they're closer than you think. And even when you look at one thing I want to do was, so that's the coaching. Now let's look at the experience on the field. So Clemson has 9 seniors, 0 transfers, and only 2 players in the first year of their system. And when I looked at this, when I did this research, I did it as how many players are in the first year at that program? Because, you know, it's different when you haven't played. Like, you can be a senior transfer, but that doesn't mean you know that system. It could be a completely different system. You could have got terrible coaching at the last program you were at. There could have terrible strength and conditioning. So looking at just how many players were in the very first year at their school, learning that system under that staff. So Clemson has 2 first-year players. They were both 4 stars. One was an early enrollee, and that was their offensive tackle. They only have 1 redshirt player, which is impressive because, you know, they don't take a whole lot of transfers at Clemson because they don't really have to. And so when you look at NC State, they have 10 seniors, 5 transfers, and one first-year player who is a redshirt freshman tight end. So he's already been on campus. This is his second year. It's just his first year playing. They have 11 redshirt players. And so they have a lot of veteran players on that team. When you look at Wake, they have 7 seniors, 3 transfers. And, you know, with their seniors, they have a lot of 6-year guys, a lot of super seniors. They have 1 first-year player, 1, and he's a transfer in the secondary. They have 14 players who have been redshirted at Wake Forest who have many years in that system. So then when you look at Florida State, and this is just the starting 22 that we're talking about, you have 6 seniors, 11 transfers, 7 first-year players, 7 players who are in their first year at Florida State. Now, Florida State has 21 redshirt players, but 9 of those didn't redshirt at FSU. So you have the lowest number of seniors, you have the highest number of transfers, and you have by far the highest number of players who are the first year in the system. And that makes a difference. It really does. You know, when you get guys, especially some of the ones who weren't here in the spring, you have to get those guys caught up really fast. And it does make a difference. And so again, like when you look at if you're mad at how Florida State lost these 3 games, I understand that, but let's look at these teams. Over the past 4 seasons, Clemson is 49-6, NC State and Wake Forest are both 30-19, and Florida State is 19-27. That's not counting this year. So you have the most first-year players, you have the most transfers, you have by far the worst record, you have the least amount of continuity by staff of all 3 programs, and yet you were able to lose 1 game by 10 points, where you dug yourself in a hole with a lot of dumb mistakes that you shouldn't have made. You know, now I think Wake beat Florida State, but, you know, the game could have been a little different had you not have shot yourself in the foot repeatedly. You had a game at NC State that you lost by 2 points that you should have won, but you gave away. You were the better team in that game. And in Clemson, you lost, you know, you came back, you got down by 1 point, but you had a terrible 2 minutes that resulted in you losing that game. And so to me, I mean, you know, come on, like that's not as bad as people are making it out to be. Then when you look at the strength of schedule for each team this year, Clemson has played 33rd, NC State has played the 21st hardest schedule, Wake the 49th, and FSU the 10th. So you're playing a top 10 hardest schedule on top of that, and you're still 4-3 with your only three losses coming against ranked teams who are, again, at full stride in their program history. They have a lot of continuity. They have a lot of veteran players and a lot of experience. And again, going back to experience on the field, one of the other things I did, you know, and I love numbers. Y'all know I like analytics. You know I like all that stuff. And I try not to bore you with it, but it does provide some context. So I decided to go through and I looked at snaps by, you know, each team for the players that started against FSU. And so I just went by each program and I looked at how many snaps of experience they had at that school, not at any other school, at that particular school. Like, for instance, Corey Durden transferred to NC State. I didn't count any of his snaps at FSU. This is all at NC State. And so when you look at it, so all three teams, I averaged out how many snaps they have a year. The average was around 930 snaps for each team. And that's per season. They had an average of 935 snaps on offense, 925 on defense. So you go in the middle there at 930. So Clemson has, well, let me start with Florida State. So currently Florida State, if you add up basically everybody at the starting 11 at the position groups, you have 20,347 snaps of experience. And I know that sounds like a lot. That sounds like, okay, how are you still making these mistakes with 20,000 plus snaps of experience? But let's look at some of the other teams here. So Clemson currently has 24,126 snaps of experience. That's 3,800 snaps more than Florida State. That is 4.1 seasons worth of experience. NC State has 29,180 snaps of experience. And again, remember, this is all at that school in that program. This does not count any snaps coming from another school. That is 8,833 snaps of experience more than Florida State has. That's worth 9.5 seasons of experience. You have Wake Forest. Now, this is obvious. This is why when I talk about how Clemson recruits better and has more talent than Florida State, but then you can easily argue, okay, well, what about Wake Forest and NC State? Well, Wake Forest has 30,882 snaps of experience by their players at that school. That is 10,535 snaps more than Florida State has of experience. That is 11.3 seasons worth of experience more than Florida State has. And that's at their current school. And I understand that sometimes it's not that easy to just say, oh, they have that much more experience or whatnot. But when you look at the snap count and the experience they have at their current school, in their current system, that is the case. And you also have to factor in there, too, a lot of those snaps by Florida State are not under Mike Norvell, are not under Adam Fuller, are not under this current staff in this system. Every one of those snaps for all the other teams, those are all under the same staff, under the same head coach at least, in the same system. So, I mean, that you have to take that into account because, like I said, I understand where you could say, well, Florida State, you know, they still out-recruit Wake and they still out-recruit NC State. Yeah, man, I understand that. But you have a lot more experience at a lot more continuity and a lot more continuity at these other programs. So, you know, what is going to happen whenever they lose all their veteran guys? Those teams are going to come back to earth at some point. Now, Clemson may not because of the way they recruit, but NC State and Wake Forest, you know, once you lose Sam Hartman, once you lose some of those talented receivers that have been there forever, they're going to come back to earth eventually. And so, you know, Florida State should be there once they get that continuity built up, once they get those things built up, that experience in the same system, then hopefully you do see that progress like those teams have made. So that's my whole point is, again, just to recap all that. When you look at the Atlantic, you have a couple of real top-tier teams, and maybe we include Syracuse in that conversation later on. I understand they are undefeated. They're in the top 25. They really have not played anybody. We're going to find out a lot about Syracuse on Saturday when they play Clemson. But, you know, when you look at Wake, NC State, and Clemson, they all have more continuity than you by far. They all have a lot more of experience than you in the same system, under the same staff. And they are at the best point in their program history. Florida State is coming out of, you know, the pit of misery in program history, just about. And they are still almost neck and neck with these teams in year two and a half under Norvell. Year three, if you want to be technical about it. But again, COVID year is just impossible to teach things over Zoom and all that. So That's just my whole point. And then we'll look at some of how Florida State has performed over the past few years and looking at the progress. So when you start in 2018, the strength of schedule was the 48th hardest schedule in the country. Their total offense was 102nd in the country and 12th in the ACC. Their total defense was 80th in the country and 9th in the ACC. And just to touch on the offensive line, and also in turnover margin. So in turnover margin, Florida State was 123rd in the country, 13th in the ACC, and their sacks allowed were 111th in the country and 13th in the ACC. So then we move to 2019. Strength of schedule, 56. Now keep in mind, Florida State has the 10th hardest schedule this year. So in 2019, you had the 56th hardest schedule. Your total offense was 66th in the country, 8th in the ACC. Your total defense, 90th in the country, 11th in the ACC. Turnover margin, you were 86th in the country, 8th in the ACC, and sacks allowed, 125th in the country, and 12th in the ACC. So then we move forward to 2020. We're starting the Mike Norvell era. Again, it's the COVID year, but we're going to count it anyway because it did happen. So strength of schedule, 69th in the country. You know, they missed Clemson and a lot of the good teams that year, but your total offense was 62nd, 9th in the ACC. Total defense was 107th in the country, 13th in the ACC. And then your sacks or your turnover margin was 88th in the country, 11th in the ACC. Sacks allowed 112th in the country, 13th in the ACC. So now let's move forward to 2021, where you get your first full year under Mike Norvell and the staff with no COVID restrictions or nothing like that. We know it wasn't a good year. And last year left us with all with some doubts about what was going to happen with this program and this staff going forward, because it did start terrible. And so when you look at the strength of schedule, it was 34th. So you got a good, you know, much harder schedule than you've had to play in the past. Your total offense was 80th in the country, 9th in the ACC. Defense was 66th in the country, 6th in the ACC. Your turnover margin was 62nd, 7th in the ACC. And your sacks allowed was 114th, 12th in the ACC. So, you know, when you're looking at everything but the offense had kind of started to trend upwards. Now let's go to 2020 so far. You've played the 10th hardest schedule, the hardest schedule of the last 4 years. Your current total offense, you're 26th in the country, 2nd in the ACC. Your total defense is 25th in the country, 3rd in the ACC. Now, their turnover margin is something that has to improve, which is another reason why this team has struggled in the last three games. They've only had one turnover in three games, and you can't do that when you're turning the ball over yourself. So it's 72nd in the country, 10th in the ACC, and look at Alex Atkins here. Sacks allowed this year, 28th in the country, 1st in the ACC. Again, guys, you have a harder schedule, ascending years of a harder schedule, and they're improving. You're now, with the hardest schedule you've played in the last 4 years, you are leaps and bounds better on your total offense, total defense, and sacks allowed rankings, and that shows progress. Like, they're getting there, they are getting closer, and that is something that I just wanted to, you know, prove here, that they don't have all the pieces they need right now. Sure, they have some good players. You know, I love what I saw out of Toa Fili. I love what I saw out of Trey Benson. This is Trey Benson's first season, full season. He got hurt at Oregon after like six carries. He doesn't have a lot of experience. Johnny Wilson doesn't have a lot of experience at you know, especially in this system. You know, Micah Pittman didn't have a whole lot of experience when he came in. You know, you have a tackle who couldn't cut it in the SEC and came over here. You didn't plan on playing him, but you had to. You're missing your best defensive tackle, who I understand everybody has injuries, and that's not an excuse. But look at where Florida State has been killed the last three games. It's running the ball and mostly dead up the middle. Why? Because your best defensive tackle is missing. Everybody has injuries. Clemson has had injuries. You know, they lost some defensive line for part of the year, but they brought in NFL playing caliber backups. Florida State doesn't have that. They're bringing in a freshman in Joshua Farmer, who has been good, you know, or Malcolm Ray, but Florida State is not at that quality depth yet to where they can just bring in another Fabian Lovett off the bench or someone who's just a little bit worse than he is. You know, there's a significant drop-off, and so yeah, injuries are all part of it, but when your depth and your talent is a little thinner than those other teams, you need those guys. It's a bigger impact when you lose players like that at Florida State than it is Clemson, because you can't reload as well. And that's something that they're going to have to build. But again, we've already seen once they got some success on the field, that you've started to see the recruiting uptick a little bit. You know, they still have to finish strong. They still have to land some guys and keep the guys that they have. So, you know, again, like I said, it's just, I understand there's going to be an expectation. And, you know, depending on how these last five games go, you know, if things go terrible, of course we can have that conversation. You know, if you lose to Georgia Tech coming off of a bye week, you know, you lose to Miami, say, I don't know, say you went, you go 2-3 in the last five. All right, we can have a real conversation about Mike Norvell. And that's fair. But if they win four of the last five, or at least even 3-2, I think you got to give him another year or two. Now, again, you're probably going to lose a lot after this year, which is going to make things hard. But just from the culture aspect, the off-the-field aspect, the way this team plays, the way they compete against teams, given some of their limitations, I just think you can see the direction that they're headed in. And I think it's very positive. And I think that they are going to continue to get better. And I think they will do fine in these last five games. And you already have Fabian Lovett, who's back at practice. He should play this week. They said he was pretty close last week, just not there. Now he's got a bye week to kind of get back in game shape. And then he'll play against Georgia Tech. So, you know, you'll have him back. That's going to make a huge difference. And you're not going to be playing a top 25, a top five team. You know, now there's not going to be any excuses to lose these games. You have to win some of these games. You know, you should beat Georgia Tech. You should beat Miami. You should beat Louisiana. You know, Syracuse on the road is going to be tough. But like I said, we're going to find out a lot about them on Saturday because, you know, I think there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors there. They are a good team. They do have some talented pieces on that offense. But they haven't played anybody. If Florida State played their schedule and most of the teams they got Louisville at home. They got Purdue at home. You know, they played at UConn, who is god-awful. They played Virginia, who's probably the worst team in the ACC, is actually Georgia Tech is favored over Virginia, if that tells you anything. They played Wagner. I don't even know who Wagner is, but I want to say that might be where Adam Fuller came from at some point. And then they got NC State without Devin Leary at home. If you give Florida State that same schedule, they're probably 6-0 too. I mean, let's just be real. They have not had to play the schedule that Florida State has had to play this season. I don't think Syracuse would beat LSU in the Superdome. I don't think they would beat. I don't think they're going to beat Clemson. You know, I don't think they're going to beat Wake Forest when they play. If they do play at Wake Forest on November 19th, so we'll see how that goes. So, you know, again, that's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough game, but not unwinnable for Florida State. And then, you know, but you do have some winnable games left on the schedule, and you do see a lot of positive, you know, coming out of some of these games still, even in a loss. You know, and again, I'm not here to make excuses. I'm not here to ask for moral victories or anything like that because that's not what things are about at Florida State. But I just think we as a fan base have been spoiled for a long time. You know, you went 40 years without a losing season. You went 40 years without missing a bowl game. It's hard to stomach this, but that doesn't mean that this team is not headed back to respectability. You know, everybody's had a down period. Alabama hasn't always been good. You know, Clemson has not always been good by any means. Even, you know, Michigan sucked for a long time and went through coaches, you know, a couple of coaches before they finally have turned the corner. So again, you know, my whole thing is it fair to have some questions? Of course it is. Depending on how these last few games go, yeah, okay, we can have that conversation once the season is over. But if Florida State can go 4-1 or 5-0 in these last five games, then I feel really positive about the direction of this team. Do I think they'll take a step next year? You know, it remains to be seen because you could lose, like we said, you could lose your quarterback. You could lose your two defensive tackles inside. You know, there's a lot of guys who are draft eligible that could leave that hopefully you can stay. But just as far as seeing how they play and how they compete so far, you know, I'm in a good place with this team. They've beat the teams that they were supposed to. A lot of people didn't think they were going to beat LSU, and they did that. You know, look at LSU. They just beat Florida in the swamp by 10 points or something. I think it was 10 points. So, you know, all that crap Florida fans talked about, oh, LSU's not that good. Well, guess what? They just beat you in your own building. You know, this team fights for each other. They play hard for each other. Speaking of Florida, they're not posting pictures flipping off saying, you know, F this team or whatever on social media like a Florida player was. You know, you don't see a lot of the negative things come out of this program. It's just, you know, it to me, it's a little bit of an overreaction after losing three close games to three good teams. I understand the standard at Florida State, you know, but, you know, God rest his soul, Bobby Bowden's not coming through that door. You know, what he did is not everybody's Alabama. Not everybody is Nick Saban. You know, not everybody can build a dynasty overnight. Not everybody's Josh Heupel. Again, like I said, for every Heupel, there's a Scott Frost. There's a Justin Fuente. You name it. There's guys like that all over the place that get fired and it doesn't work out. You know, do I think Norvell will be the savior of Florida State? I don't know that. Do I think he's at least got them headed in a right direction to where they're not a complete train wreck or dumpster fire like they were from about 2017 to 2020, 2021? Yeah, I do think he's that guy, and I do think he's a good coach, and I do think he has some things he has to learn on his own. But, you know, I mean, at the same time, he's not telling Jordan to fumble the ball, and I know Jordan didn't mean to, but he's not telling him on, you know, fourth and two to throw it 20 yards down the field when you have us, you know, the back coming out of the backfield who's wide open for a first down and you make the wrong read. Granted, I don't agree with the play call in the first place, but there were options open to get that first down. Mike Norvell's not throwing the ball. That's Jordan Travis. So, and I love Jordan as a quarterback. And, you know, I think he's done an impeccable job this year. But those are the things that you have to look at. You know, Adam Fuller, maybe you don't agree with the play call of how they did it. He didn't tell he didn't tell Kevin Knowles to whiff on a blitz. He didn't tell Akeem Dent to get burnt going down the sideline on the touchdown where Clemson scored with their tight end. You had a freshman and DJ Lundy out there make a miscommunication because Azaria Thomas was in coverage. And I think he's going to be a great DB, but you know he's only played very limited snaps, so he's still learning. They had a miscommunication that led to a touchdown. I'm pretty sure that's two guys covering a receiver and leaving the tight end wide open. I'm pretty sure it was not the play call. So, you know, there's going to be some growing pains, and I understand it does get frustrating to watch 3 weeks in a row knowing good and darn well that they should have won one of those games and they should have never been in the position they were in the Clemson game. But again, you can't make mistakes like that against top five teams. They're good at exposing that. You know, look at Shipley. He runs hard. He's a good player. He ran up the middle a lot of times for big gains. Guess who's not in the middle? Your best defensive tackle. So that's the thing. Like this, again, this team has some talented pieces, but when they're not there, it hurts. And so, you know, just hopefully they can get, you know, get some things righted, clean up some of these mistakes. They did a lot better about penalties and things like that. Hopefully they can start creating some turnovers. You know, I mean, even like Jamie Robinson has been pretty quiet this year. You know, you've just had some guys that you thought Amarion Cooper was going to be that dude this year, and he's just not. So, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility to think some players were underperforming. Is that coaching? I don't know. It does happen on occasion. But the thing is, when you also look at Norvell, he's been able to go into the portal and get a majority of your talent, which also speaks to where this team is at. If every one of your players that is the best players on the team, if 90% of those guys are transfers, that just tells you about what he inherited. You know, and that's no dish to the people on the team because I know they're trying hard and I know they recruited and I know they want to win too. But when you have a terrible passing offense and then you go out and you remodel you gut the receiver room and remodel it all with transfers, and now you have one of the better passing offenses in the conference, you can see that they just have to get more pieces. You know, you add a Hakeem Williams there and see what happens, which even he said after the game that he was not worried about a win or a loss when you're going against a team like Clemson. He saw the team fight and he was encouraged by that. So, you know, if a player's not going to jump off the bandwagon, then why should we? And or recruit anyway. So that's the thing. Just I think he deserves to have a little bit of time to continue to build this thing, because not everything is built overnight. You know, it does take some time for some people to build a program. I mean, look at Mel Tucker at Michigan State. He had a great year his first year there because he took like 35 transfers. Now he lost a lot of those players, and Michigan State's kind of on the ropes right now. So, you know, it's just, that's the thing, is it takes time to build a foundation. And, you know, when you're standing there, it's like, you know, the funny little Flex Seal commercials or whatever, where the guy's slapping patches over the big container of water that's leaking. Like, Imagine Norvell walking into a room with his container of water, which is his team, and you got 50 different holes in it, and he's just in the portal just slapping Flex Seal on it, you know, just trying to seal every hole that he can to make a competent team. And so far, I think he's done that. So once they have enough time to build that foundation, which, again, like we talked about with Alex Atkins, you see the offensive lineman that he brought in. You see the offensive lineman that he has committed. And those guys take a little bit of time. We're not seeing that pay off yet. So if you can just hold the fort down, you know, and let those pieces get developed, because let's be honest, like, where is Florida State hurting the most this year? It's in the trenches. And that's because you lost Fabian Lovett and you have Robert Cooper, but when you don't have Fabian Lovett to help Robert Cooper, he's getting doubled a lot. You know, Verse has been a breath of fresh air. He's been lovely to have at defensive end. He's been banged up a lot. He's been injured. He's missed a game. You know, so that's the thing. They're trying to build a foundation while also pulling patchwork players out of the portal to try and make this roster good enough to win some games. And that's what they've done. And so, like I said, there's a lot of football left to play. But when I just look at kind of the mid-season eval of where they're at, I think LSU was a great win, and that win looks even better. Yeah, the one loss they had, they got smoked by Tennessee. I was like, oh, well, that's not good. Tennessee just beat Alabama. So that's a really good team. And so you look at, you know, they beat LSU. They beat Duquesne. They beat Boston College. They beat Louisville. They didn't have a whole lot of really impressive wins outside of LSU, like we talked about before in another episode. You know, Louisville was a good win for them, but it was how you won, not who you beat. When you look at Duquesne, of course you're supposed to beat them, you know, and then you look at Boston College. I mean, yeah, it was impressive that you won by, you know, 30 points, but they're terrible. So, like, when you ran into three really good teams, the best teams in your division, the best teams in the ACC, and you're in a rebuild and you hung with them, you know, blow for blow for the most part, again, you can't get down, you know, you can't get down 28-7 against a team like Wake Forest who can score like that. You can't let Clemson score 17 points in 2 minutes and expect to win those games. You can't get shut out in the second half against NC State and allow them to score enough points with a backup quarterback. But you've been in every one of those games. None of those games felt like the last few years. You know, Clemson, you turn on the game and you're like, all right, we're playing great for the first 5 minutes. And then it's like, well, I can turn this off. You know, people aren't reading books in the stands at the Clemson game anymore. So it's progress, and progress is part of the process. But it's not easy to stomach that when you're a program like Florida State. So, you know, like I said, there's a lot of football left to be played. We're going to see how this team responds to a 3-game losing streak. But if they go 4-1 in the last 5 games, or even 5-0, man, you just got to feel good about what this team was able to accomplish this season. They were close in the games against a really tough teams, and they won most of the games that they were supposed to. You know, so just be patient. I know it's hard. I understand it. I have expectations too. I hate losing, just like everybody else. And I promise you, everyone in that locker room and everyone on that staff hates losing a heck of a lot more than we are, because I'm sitting behind a computer screen talking about Florida State right now. I'm not out on a practice field sweating, bleeding, cramping, hurting, you know, getting hit by somebody trying to win a football game. I'm sure it means a lot more to them than it does to us. So, you know, they're trying. It's frustrating to see a lot of the mistakes, and I understand that. And you can criticize them without being negative, and you have that right to do that. You can say, well, okay, you know, technically we're in year 3, and now we're in game 7. How long are we going to keep having miscommunications? I get that. That's a fair point. But like I said, I feel like the trajectory of the team, when you look at the off-the-field stuff, when you look at the play they've had on the field, when you look at the things that they've had to overcome, I think they're headed in the right direction. You know, you just got bit by the injury bug at the wrong time, and I think that hurt a lot. You know, if you'd had Fabian in these last few games and things like that, if you'd had Trayshawn Ward in these games, you never know, because he was your best back, and you put up 223 yards rushing on Clemson. So what if you'd had your best back? What if you'd had Bless Harris at tackle? What if you'd had, you know, Fabian Lovett in these games? You know, there's context to everything. So, again, guys, like I said, I'm just I'm just trying to say that I don't think it's as bad as some people think. I think they're headed in the right direction, you know, and if things don't work out well over the next five games and into next year, then sure, we can have that conversation. But for right now, I'm pretty happy with the trajectory of this program. You know, they got to start playing better in big time situations. They have to find ways to win and learn to win games. And in fairness, that's not something they know how to do because they haven't won a whole lot of games. So, you know, now they've been in some big games and they've seen where the critical mistakes kill them. And hopefully they learn from that and they move on to the rest of the season. And I mean, you still got two rivalry games that you can win. You got one on the road against a Miami team that doesn't look all that good. And you got one at home against a Florida team who's probably better than Miami, but you get them at home. So hopefully Florida State can just put together a good end of the season, make a nice bowl game, and just roll some momentum into recruiting and into next year. But, you know, for me, that was my whole point was just, again, you're the least experienced team in the top four teams in the Atlantic, even if you include Syracuse, because they've been there, you know, Dino Babers has been there for a while. You're the least experienced. You have the least amount of tenure at coaching staff, and you're coming off some of the worst seasons of any of those other teams outside, not named Syracuse. And yet here you are going blow for blow with somebody. You know what I mean? That's just impressive. So, I mean, that's like me getting in the ring with Mike Tyson and actually lasting more than about 30 seconds. You know what I mean? And that's only as long as I could run from him before he hit me for the first time. You know, you got something there, but like I said, when you look at just the numbers that I said, where you look at the combined record of the teams over the past few years compared to Florida State, you know, would you think a 19-27 team since 2018 should be beating teams that have been 30-19 and 49-6 and are ranked and are coming off some of the best seasons that they've ever had in school history? No. So the fact that they're even in that conversation, and I know this is Florida State, we have higher expectations than that, and you got to get back to beating these teams. But right now, like I said, they are at the top, they are at the pinnacle of these programs, and Florida State is pulling itself up off the mat, and they're hanging right there with them. So, you know, just give them some time, keep believing in them, stay in the stadium for all four quarters. You know, and just keep believing in this team. And if things go south, sure, we'll have that conversation then. But until then, I'm good. You know, I'm okay with what I'm seeing. I'm frustrated too. I'm frustrated. Don't get me wrong. But I'm pretty happy with how they've performed so far, given the competition, given the injuries, given where they're at, you know, given their strength of schedule and everything. As long as they can finish the season strong, I think we'll be okay. So we'll just go ahead and wrap it up here. Like I said, it is a bye week, so I may try and put something else out later in the week. We'll see. Not a whole lot to talk about. This is kind of the one thing I really wanted to cover was just that mid-season report and how Florida State is progressing as a program in the right direction. Like I said, I got some more things I'm going to be setting up around the office and get some new toys in to help just bring better quality content to you guys. So in the meantime, just be on the lookout on social media. We'll be active on there. Some of the stuff I'm going to put out on social media, I just kind of wanted to save it for the podcast first. So, but I do appreciate you guys listening. I do appreciate all your support. And hopefully we can get things back on track next week against a Georgia Tech team who is, you know, kind of looked like they were going to be the worst team in the ACC, and then they got rid of Jeff Collins. And now they're playing some better football. I do believe they play Thursday night, so hopefully we can all kind of watch them as a family and see what we're going to face against a bad Virginia team. You know, but they're 113th in total offense, 80th in total defense, 109th in sacks allowed. You know, you're getting Fabian Lovett back. You're getting a bye week. You know, who knows, maybe even if you get, I doubt we're going to see Winston Wright, but maybe. It has already been announced that it's going to be a noon game, which is, you know, not exciting. Doesn't really bring the atmosphere, but Florida State has an overwhelming amount of night games, primetime games this year. You know, a lot of teams haven't had that, so I guess we had to have a nooner now, or every now and then, and at least they waited until it wasn't 95,000 degrees in Tallahassee to do it. So hopefully this is their bounce back game, and I mean, it's one you expect them to win, but I think they'll handle their business. I think they get some guys back, and I think they're going to right the ship. So until then, we'll catch you guys next week with a Georgia Tech preview. And again, I appreciate you guys listening, and thanks for the support. So you guys have a good weekend. Enjoy a stress-free Saturday where we don't have to play and worry about our team again. And we'll catch you guys on the other side. So, go Noles.